Welcome to Between Two Chairs, Demystifying Commercial Real Estate, the podcast that brings you the latest insights and trends on the South Florida commercial real estate market with your hosts, Fernando Arencibia Jr. and Jennifer Wollman. In each episode, we dive into the world of commercial real estate and break down complex concepts to make them accessible for everyone. Whether you're a real estate professional, a curious investor, or just interested in the South Florida market in general, Between Two Chairs is the podcast for you. So pull up a chair and join us.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Between Two Chairs. My name is Fernando Arencibia, and with me, as always, is one of the best bakers I have ever met in my life.
Corinna Woman.
Well, she's not here, so instead we'll get Jennifer Woman. Hi, Jennifer, say hi.
Ay, 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 hi.
By the way, I just got some banana bread. All right. Corinna, this does not get you off the hook, but it's very good. Thank you, partner.
That is Martha Stewart's vegan banana bread. Ooh. Best banana bread ever.
That's right. I love it.
And there's a plug for Martha.
There you go.
Our dear buddy, yeah. Martha, who came to Florida Realtors.
That's right.
That's what we're going to be talking about today. So absolutely. she was the keynote speaker at one of our meetings. Boy, was she amazing.
You are the queen of transitions. I love it. It's amazing. But yeah, you're right. We're fresh off of the Florida Realtors midwinter meetings. And as always, we like to do these small or short episodes just to break down some of the important data and information that we gathered from the meetings. And, you know, there was a lot.
Yes, there's always a lot. I don't know about you, but I have a hard time sleeping because my brain's going a million miles a minute.
Right.
So I wake up with all these ideas and things and tons of information. So let's start going into some of your notes, because with you being, you know, running for Florida Realtor Secretary, you were in some pretty high level meetings and able to get a lot of great information to share with our listeners. So, and congratulations on the run, by the way.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I very much appreciate it. I think that, you know, what would be valuable to anyone listening is to kind of give a breakdown. In all of these meetings, there's always an economic breakdown. And usually they go from the macro to the micro. And of course, they connect everything to what is happening in real estate within the state of Florida. And then there are some specificity as to the different areas of Florida that are positively being affected by some of the economic forces or some challenges that they see ahead. But you and I have always spoken about how real estate is really a labor and demographic, market. And so, you know, I thought it was really interesting. One of the things that they spoke about was the pent-up demand and that sellers cannot wait longer to begin to make decisions as to whether they're going to put their properties on the market. As you can imagine, there was conversation about interest rates. It was conversation about, you know, how the buyers are acting in the marketplace and conversations about inventory, which seems to be a conversation that we've been having for some time. And they tied it all back to demographic shifts, you know, and they said, well, look at what happens over the next 2 years. You're expecting 7 million newborn babies, 3 million marriages, 15 million divorces, 7 million people will turn 65, 4 million deaths, 4 million net new jobs, and 50 million job switches. So the reason why it's broken down like this is that these are all life events that usually compel, you know, somebody to either look for a home, sell their home, and so
sell their business,
sell their business,
sell their company,
absolutely,
right? Get bigger space, etc.
That's right. Invest. And so that was a real interesting kind of macro approach of just looking at, look, this is what is happening overall in the next 2 years. And as you can imagine, you know, the presentations are really geared to be a presentation about the economy overall, but then also about what is affecting, you know, residential real estate. And, you know, we've spoken here before about there is a correlation between residential and commercial, and what happens in commercial does have an effect on what happens in residential and vice versa. And so, you know, I thought that that was a really interesting, you know, dynamic approach. And we're starting to see that, right? I think in every marketplace throughout Florida, we're starting to see an inch up of inventory and new properties that are coming into the marketplace.
Agreed. And one of the things I wanted to point out that Florida Realtors has is they have a product called SunStats, where they break down. So to Fernando's point, the information that he just went over is the macro, right, for the entire state. But then Florida Realtors breaks down, and it's for residential, but I find the numbers very, very useful on the commercial side. And that product is called SunStats. So if you are a member of Florida Realtors and you're a commercial broker, I highly recommend that you look at those, because they do a deep dive into every area, and it gives you a really good picture of what's happening in your market. Is it contracting? Is it expanding? Are prices going up? Is inventory going up? Because as we know, with real estate being so hyper-local, in some areas, inventory is going up. In other areas, it's going up, but only in certain price ranges, right? So you get into those minute details, and all of a sudden you can start saying, okay, if I'm in Miami in the Pinecrest zip code, inventory is really tight on properties that are within this range. There's more properties available in the higher end. What does that tell me? How does that tie in to my retail experience and who potential new retailers are going to be? Which tenants are probably going to be priced out of my market based on the higher income demographic that's coming in? So I just wanted to point out that just because some of this information, or maybe especially because this information is related to Florida Realtors on, you know, residential housing, that for commercial brokers, that information, if you do a deep dive into that information, is super, super useful to their business. Office demand, business growth, business contraction, etc., is going to be seen in those numbers.
And I think that there is, especially if you specialize in multifamily as a commercial broker or as a conventional investor, a lot of the metrics that you're going to find on the residential side of the aisle is going to be extremely insightful and helpful to the work that you're doing. And to your point, for those that love infographics and be able to see everything in one page, one of the great things about the program is that it allows you to create this infographic with basically all of the major metrics. And you could search by zip code, you could search by city, you could search by area. And so, you know, it really is an interesting dynamic, and it's a great resource. And, you know, it's been created by the research department of Florida Realtors and Dr. Brad O'Connor, who is the chief economist for Florida Realtors. And every time that we get together, he does a presentation that gives you all of the most important items that are related to real estate in the state of Florida, right? Let me give you a little bit of that breakdown of the presentation. First, let's talk about the Florida housing market in 2024. He spoke, of course, about the things that we've discussed, which is that demand was weaker in 2024 as opposed to 2023. Still high, but weaker than it was before. Mortgage rates are still elevated. Everybody knows that. The market gets disrupted by two major hurricanes, right, in the central west coast of Florida. You have domestic immigration has slowed down. International buyer demand still tipped. And you have a slowdown of job growth, but there's still job growth in the state of Florida. And of course, something that it's going to come up only because it also affects commercial buildings, which is the condo issues that have to do with insurability and the reserve requirements that came out of really the tragedy of Surfside, right? And all of the new state laws that have been put in place to hopefully prevent something like that from happening again. He also spoke about looking ahead. Interest rate is going to be a challenge. And by the way, it seems to be part of the conversation in every update that we've gotten, commercial, residential. The sense is that, you know, we're likely to be hovering in this interest rate for the year, right? And that if we see any movement, it'll probably be towards the tail end of the year. But people are really looking at 2026 to be more of the year where rates move. We'll wait to see how that works. You know, I don't think anybody was expecting the rapid rise of interest rates a couple of years ago and for them to remain where they were last year. So, you know, we'll wait and see what happens as we navigate this year.
Yeah, there's still too many variables for right. the Fed to feel comfortable doing,
that's right.
a big decrease anytime soon.
No doubt. New Yorkers are still moving to Florida, but a bit of a slower trend, right? New listings of single family homes are up 9.5%. New listings of condos and townhomes are up 11.3%. Condo prices increased more than single family homes, which is kind of interesting, but that's statewide. I don't know if that's happening everywhere. And I think that also, you have to differentiate between the age of the buildings. And,
right.
and I think that is seeping into the conversations in commercial buildings as well, right. regarding the age, the condition, just because, again, the requirements have gotten tightened up, in that regard.
And we had a lot of luxury inventory in the condo market delivered in the big metro right. areas in end of 23 and 24.
Yeah. And for commercial development, there are a lot of new residential units that are coming up. If you're looking at building permits and, you know, you're looking at an estimated housing stock that's going to rise about 11% in the state of Florida. And if you look at all the states in our great nation, the Florida ranks as sixth in the amount of new housing inventory that is going to add. And, you know, some people might look at that as, well, you know, are we growing too fast? Are we building too fast? But remember, we spent about 12, 13 years below average in construction. And so it's hard to keep up with the pace of all the demographic shifts that we mentioned at the start of this episode. Focus has to be on jobs and inflation, right? Basically monitoring the interest rates, which is affecting everything. I think, you know, one way or the other, it's going to be part of the conversation for the remainder of the year.
Right. And it's still a reason why those prices are going up in a lot of areas, whether they're commercial or residential properties, is because of the amount of cash that's going into deals to offset the higher borrowing costs. So that we expect to continue at least for the first half of this year.
I felt there was a sense of there was a lot of good energy in all of those rooms. Mm-hmm. Everybody was eager to get back to work.
Optimistic.
Everybody's optimistic. I think there is a sense that 25 started better than the end of 24 for most people that I spoke to in the hallways and in all the meetings. And some of the concerns that we have discussed over the last few years remain concerns, even though there have been tools that have been used to address them. They continue to be, you know, part of the conversation. One of them obviously continues to be insurance. And I think that, by the way, that's a nationwide conversation. Yeah. You know, when I was in D.C. a couple of weeks ago, that was really a big part of the conversation among commercial brokers was, again, insurance and, you know, what happens in one part of the country, how it affects the others. Of course, we've spoken about that.
Yeah, and we did hear some horror stories where some people got foreclosed on a commercial building because their insurance lapsed and they just couldn't place it. And and the bank took over and there was a lot of equity in it. So, yeah.
It's crazy. One of the action items has to do with looking to put a cap or a limit on look back periods for substantial improvements. I don't know if that's something you wanted to kind of discuss.
Sure, we can,
you know,
we
I
can
think
go
most
over
people
it
don't
real
really
briefly,
understand that. Yeah.
Because,
sure.
yeah, especially with the new changes in flood zones and flooding, FEMA, et cetera. So the look back period is basically it's related to flood insurance, and it states that if you have improved your property over 50% in the last 3 years is the look back period, right?
I think it depends on the county, right?
Right. Yeah. It changes by county and flood zone, but they go back to the 3 years. And let's say you have a property that you've been improving over the years, never flooded, and you put in a new roof, you put on, you know, some impact resistant glass, you've updated it a little bit for energy efficiency, etc., over the last 3 years, and all of a sudden in year before that property floods, if it's more than 50%, if the dollar value of your improvements is more than 50% of the assessed value of the property, and how they assess the value is that you have to, we should do a whole episode on this. And how you calculate that will determine whether or not you have to bring the entire building up to code, your house or building. Yeah. So that the Florida realtors said, look, if there, we understand if you've been improving it over time because of floods, right? So if it's been, if you've had flood year one and you had to put in, you know, 30,000, and flood year two, you had to put in 50, et cetera, we understand that falling into the look back period. But what we don't want is property owners to be penalized for improvements that they're doing to make their home or their property more resilient to floods and storms, etc., to be penalized on the back end when all of a sudden it does flood. So we did pass a motion that was going to cap or limit the look back periods for substantial improvements to exclude things that were done for sustainability and home hardening purposes. So that motion was to support legislation to cap that. So that's going to be one of the action items that we look at when we go to Great American Realtor Days in March.
No, absolutely. No, and it's a huge problem for a lot of people, especially if you think about areas of our state that have had back-to-back hurricane, you know, and hurricane damage, and people are rebuilding their homes for the second time, which is, you know, heartbreaking. And the last thing that they would expect is to, you know, maybe get to a point where they could, where they cannot do that as a result of these rules. So, you know, these are the kind of things where I see a lot of value in our advocacy and in our work, is that when we identify an issue that could affect a lot of people, that we're able to find a way to address it, you know? All right. So what else did you find in your, you know, obviously we there's so many things going on that we can't go to every single session at the same time. Right. So I'm wondering if there were any sessions that you went to that you found.
Yeah,
I was
in a global committee meeting. Super, super interesting. We had Silvia Cesarato, and she's the Consul General for Canada in Miami. Mm-hmm. And she discussed what a huge trade partner is with Florida. And in their five key areas where Canada ranks in the top three as a trade partner with our state. Sorry, I must have had some of that dry banana bread. For our exports, Canada is number two behind Brazil and ahead of Mexico. For imports, Canada is number three behind China and Mexico, which that surprised me. For foreign direct investment, they're number two behind the UK and above Germany, who came in at number three. And for real estate, they're number one, followed by Brazil. And they're also number one for the number of visitors, followed by the UK. The interesting part about this is that I literally walk out of that meeting, and within 2 hours of walking out of that meeting, the trade tariffs hit.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, it'll be very, very interesting. I know they've stepped back a little bit because these tariffs were very specific. It was basically to help with immigration and, more importantly, with the fentanyl crossing at our borders. And so it wasn't necessarily on the actual trade itself. Yeah. Those weren't the reasons for it. So they've stepped back a bit. It looks like partners are coming to the table. But, you know, those are all things to take into consideration. Yeah. If you know who your main, and this goes into the deep data geek dives that we like to do, if you know who your top trade partners are in your specific market, these shifts coupled with what's going on that we see at Florida Realtors with the Sun Stats, all of these data points pieced together really help give you a picture of where the opportunities and the challenges are going to lie. Not today, but maybe, you know, 6 months, a year, 2 years down the road. So that's to me was super interesting.
Yeah, and it's really interesting because, you know, as a state, we are a very, we attract a lot of international investment, particularly in real estate. And I think that nationwide, one out of every four or one out of every five purchases of real estate by a foreign buyer happened in Florida. About 54% of those that buy in Florida buy in South Florida. They buy in Miami, mm-hmm. Broward, Palm Beach. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it definitely merits monitoring because it does affect our markets. And to your point, how big of a trade partner not Canada is with the United States, but also specifically with Florida.
Yeah, right? Florida exports $5.2 billion annually to Canada. Mostly, you know, 20% of that is in agricultural products. Mm. But we also, and that's in goods, we also export $3.5 billion in services, including business, travel, use for intellectual property, transportation, et cetera. So think about it. You're in an agricultural county, right? Or where there's canning or whatever of your agricultural products, or you're near a port, and all of a sudden between Canada and Mexico, both of which were hit by tariffs, those are our two largest trade partners. You start looking at those numbers, and what does that mean for warehouse space, right? What is that near the port? What does that mean for, you know, businesses that cater to those companies, et cetera? So I thought that was very interesting. And then again, we import $6 billion.
Yeah.
So if they reciprocate with high tariffs, you know, what does that mean to our costs, et cetera? So that information was fascinating, and we'll have that report on our notes, our episode notes. The other thing that I really enjoyed in this, again, this isn't political commentary. Yeah. It's just something that I found really interesting was that David Wasserman with the Cook Political Report gave a presentation during our advocacy session. And being a retail geek, I loved that he tied retail with being able to look at data points for as a predictor for how a party is going to do in an election. And it kind of goes along, you know, where we get information from, right? We said, you know, use the U-Haul report to find out immigration and emigration patterns. Use the Procter & Gamble report to find out, you know, where the average consumer shopping and what's happening in their pocketbook. And in this case, it was between Whole Foods and Cracker Barrel, right? That Whole Foods is a good predictor for Democrats, and Cracker Barrel is a good predictor for Republicans. So that was more in terms of pocketbook issues, right? Economic issues to look at. And then in terms of social issues to look at, it was, and lifestyle, it was Lululemon for Democrats and Tractor Supply for Republicans. So I thought that was super interesting. And then I think my biggest highlight was when he mentioned that somebody in one of his audiences, not a Florida Realtors, but when he was giving this, said that she came up afterwards and she's like, I think you made a mistake. Cracker Barrel. Don't you mean Crate and Barrel? Because she'd never heard of Cracker Barrel before. So I guess she'd be in the Whole Foods. Also showed a demographic. He's like, she was a younger, you know, person. It was in a metro area. It wasn't, you know, I think he was in New York or Boston. Oh, she's like, didn't you mean Crate and Barrel?
By the way, they got great hash browns in Cracker Barrel, just saying.
I don't know. I always go there for the little triangle with the peg that you jump.
Yeah, but I'm curious. So how does he tie basically the number of stores in an area? How does he make the connection? I understand kind of the dynamic of this store and how it relates to that, but how does he look at an area? Does he look at, you know, the number of stores?
I don't know.
Volume? No.
I don't know how he uses that as a predictor, other than that the counties that had more Cracker Barrels versus more Whole Foods. So it was more the location, right?
Yeah.
So if how he actually gets that data, what each store generates, I don't know if he uses that at all. But he basically said counties or metro areas that
they have more Tractor Supply than Lululemon's.
Correct.
Then that's right.
Correct. He makes said, sense. But that being said, in this election versus the last election where Biden came out as the president, it showed that there wasn't as big a shift with either the Lululemon or the Whole Foods for the Democrat side, right, that Trump also took, and the Republicans in general, yeah, not just, even if Trump didn't win that county, yeah, the congressional Republicans won in those Whole Food and Lululemon counties, right, which showed that this election, mm-hmm, was not about societal issues. It was about lifestyle and economics, and everybody's wallet was hurting. Right. So that's what his Lululemon Whole Foods versus, yeah, Cracker Barrel Tractor Supply showed. So I thought that was fascinating.
Yeah. No, 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 for sure.
All righty. What else do you have on your list?
I mean, we had great presenters like Donald Miller that we've spoken about with his book Story Brand. And of course, we had a very dynamic set of meetings regarding the governance of Florida Realtors and the work ahead. You know, the mid-year meetings is always about that. But I love how they sprinkle in all this great data and presentation so that we could take some stuff to back to our markets and, you right, know, and to our work and our businesses.
And we got a lot of legislative priorities out. So we know we're going to be focusing on, right, the business rent tax. We know that this year is going to be harder in terms of big, yeah, budget items, but the business rent tax is still, yeah, out there. We did hear some interesting anecdotes from different people in other markets about how the Live Local Act is working and projects, right, going up and kind of pressure points that people, yeah, are seeing in individual areas. I know Hollywood is having an issue because a developer wants to build and they're using Margaritaville as an example for height, but then the Hollywood is saying, no, no, that height was special. It was a special district specifically, right, for. Right. So as, yeah, we always said, the Live Local, a lot of the devilish details are going to come out, right, via lawsuits, and, yeah, and the courts are going to have to clarify what exactly it is. Yeah. So I don't know if that's going to be tweaked again during, yeah, legislative session, true, but it has been, I mean, everybody in the country is looking at how that's no going problem. As a way to address housing, yeah, issues if they're in an area with a shortage of housing supply.
Yeah. For sure. And I think that as I've learned through the years, there are always tweaks to the bill, mm-hmm, that come out year after year. So as little pressure points or issues come up, there's usually some sort of a fix legislatively that is addressed. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if that's part of the conversations that we have in Tallahassee coming up in a little bit less than a month.
Correct. So. All right. So all right. That's all for this episode.
That's right.
That was the Florida Realtors Update. We'll have an update for you after we go to legislative session to see which way the wind's blowing up in,
that's right,
up, exactly, in Tallahassee. We know it's, yeah, going to be yeah, it's going to be interesting, that's for sure, given for the, sure, political dynamics that's going on within our state among, absolutely, the parties that are in charge, right, you know, the Republican Party in itself is having a little, right, bit of a civil war is how it was described. Right. So that should be really interesting. And, yeah, we'll have an update on that when we get back. And in the meantime, thank you for, right, pulling up a chair. Have a great day.
Bye. Thank you, guys.